All right. Welcome back. It's been a while since I've recorded Media Munchies, but I never gave up on it. I didn't, not this time. Last time, yes. This time, I was just busy and like settling in. I just moved, so it's like, yeah, whatever. And I've been doing a lot of drag, so, but I really wanted to make a episode about this because, damn, you ever have an old obsession that just comes back to haunt you out of nowhere? Because that is what happened with me and the Hunger Games. Now, I don't mean the movies, although I did watch them and I was like, okay, they're good. Just out of nowhere, I was bored and I was like, I'm gonna watch the Hunger Games. And then my friend was like, let's do a Hunger Games book club. I feel like my obsession is coming back up. And I was like, let's do it. So my friends, they don't smoke weed, so they're not here with me today. But I am the weed man. I can't. Okay. So I'm here to talk about the Hunger Games books. And I've never done a book podcast before, so this is really exciting. I was like, have I a Song of Ice and Fire? Like, hello? Have I not done that series? No, I haven't. I fully have not. I barely even talked about House of the Dragon, and it's kind of annoying. I was gonna do it with my ex, but not gonna happen. But anyways, this is the first book podcast I'm doing, and let's just jump into it. The Hunger Games are a YA series, and to be honest, like, they're really good, even though they're meant for teenagers. Like, I don't know. It was giving me, like, teen vibes, but it was also giving me, like, damn, like, I did not appreciate this when I was a teen. I did not, like, fully connect. Because there's symbolism, there's some society issues. What? Some society issues. As if that isn't the whole premise. But literally, though, it kind of makes me want to, like, start a revolution. No offense. Like, I don't know. Are we all feeling that the world is kind of shit right now? Because, like, that on top of me reading The Hunger Games is, like, okay, time to sort of get on it. And let's talk about that first, to be honest. There's a ruling class of people in this book series, and they're called the Capital. Let's just let that sink in. The Capital. Dystopian society. Where the poor are punished for being poor. You rebelled, so we're gonna get your children. And then there's the Capital. They're the rich people. They don't have to worry about anything because everyone else does their labor for them. And it's like the whole thing, I was like, we live in a society. Now I'm on the second book and I'm sort of used to it, but I'm like, oh my, like, did we not realize as teens that this was, like, I don't know, representative of certain aspects of society? Or, like, I don't know, it's not the same dystopia, but it is a dystopia. Let me tell you, the world. Okay, let's not get too dark here. But yeah, we'll come back to that because there's a lot of just little moments, but I want to talk more about the plot, you know. That's the society. Okay, listen, the characters. They are so much more well fleshed out in the books. And I feel like everyone remembers the movie and they're like, oh, it's like the boring love triangle. But it's like, I don't know if this is just me, but like Katniss in the books, icon. She is an icon. And let me just say, it's not Jennifer Lawrence's fault, probably. I don't know. Other people said she was good in other things, whatever, whatever. But like, just the direction is so bland. Like, she does not emote enough for this movie. It's so weird. Anyways, in the books, she is a person of color. She is very autistic coded. And like, the no emote thing was not like because of autism. It was just like clear that they were not giving her enough lines or giving her enough whatever. There just was not enough of anything in the movie and it was frustrating. But anyways, she is autistic coded because she's like, oh, like, I can't people please, like, I can't lie. How am I supposed to get sponsors in this fucking game? And they're like, well, think of something. And then PETA is like, well, I thought of something. PETA is so funny. He, somebody described, like, he's playing 3D chess with everyone's minds when he thinks of, like, what to say in those interviews. He's like, yeah, I have a crush on Katniss. And everyone's like, oh my god, Capitol shuts down. Imagine being part of the Capitol in those PETA moments. This is not something I said, but, like, imagine. Year one, he's like, I have a crush. Year two, he's like, if it weren't for the baby, gag. The gag of the season. He is reality TV gold. He could go on Drag Race. Anyways. But yeah, Katniss is like, I don't know. She doesn't know how she comes off and doesn't realize she comes off as like off-putting to the normal people. But like, I feel like the real ones get her, you know? PETA, the ADHD BF to the autistic GF. As you can tell, I'm Team PETA in terms of the love triangle, quote unquote. There is really no love triangle in the first book. Like, and that's why I like it so much. Because they don't, they're like, Gale, he's just a friend. And we're not going to talk about him that often. And it feels right. The second book, I'm on the second book and it's just depressing me to my core. Everything is depressing. The first book felt like the good times. There was no Gale talk. There was no, like, the government is going to kill everyone and make everything awful for everyone. It was just like, yeah, we hate the government. Yeah, we're vibing. Yeah, it sucks that I'm in the games, but, like, I'll live and, you know, with my boyfie, with my boyfie to take care of me. Anyways, yeah, PETA is such a nice character, too, because he's, like, he has the banter, he's got the chats, and they have so much chemistry in the books. And I forgot about that because the movie is so shit. Like, it does not show their chemistry. Everything is so dry. There's no banter. There's no, like, ugh. It's so annoying. He's dying in the book, and he still is, like, flirting with Katniss. In the movie, he's just dying. And it's like, okay, but give us more. When you watch the movie without reading the books, you're like, this is fine. And then after the books, it was so bad. We did that. We made the mistake of doing that. And, like, we just hated the movie. We hated it. It hit different. More similarities between the book and the movie. Okay, let's talk about the romance, because that was changed a lot. The thing about the movie is they can't show Katniss's thoughts, and they really don't do a good job of it of showing it through, like, facial expressions, so we don't know how she's feeling, we don't know what she's thinking about anything, really. We don't know she's her plans in the games. We don't, because she's so smart. She knows what other people are doing. She's good at reading them in a survival situation, but in a social situation, she just can't. And that's really relatable to me. And she is so oblivious to the romance. She's like, oh my god, he's looking at me like, he could be happy gazing at me forever. Like, he's so good at pretending. Like, what? And then he tells a whole fucking story about the first day I saw you in, like, kindergarten, I fell in love. And she's like, oh my god, like, seems real, but, like, damn. Oh well, don't know, don't care, just gonna focus on surviving. And honestly, she was so real for that. She's like, no, romance is not. And they make that such, like, nobody shows you that in the movie. Nobody shows you that she's so concentrated on surviving that that's why she's so cold towards PETA, and not because she just cannot act it. But, like, yeah, because in her mind, she has this complex relationship with affection, and she has these walls up because, like, she doesn't want to get close to someone when she lives in such a dangerous world. And then in the Hunger Games, too, when you're literally fighting to your death, and you will probably have to kill homie over here. And meanwhile, PETA's just, like, having the time of his life. He's flirting, he's, like, just so happy to finally be noticed by the girl he loves. He's an icon. Anyways. So I also want to talk about other characters. Like Haymitch. I kind of think he's an icon. I think he's misunderstood because he comes off as a bitch. And he fully has this random ass fight where he punches PETA in the books, and that does not happen in the movie. And it was wild. It was wild to read. But, like, I feel like I sympathize with him a lot, because after you read the book, you're like, yeah, it's traumatic. It's traumatic what they go through in the games. How are you going to even live? And then you have to mentor people and just watch them die. No kidding, he's drinking all the fucking time. And it's like, what can you do? You know, what can you do but be like this sarcastic drinking man? Cinna is the best character. I'm low-key, like, the best minor character. I cannot get enough of Cinna because he's, like, so chill. He's woke because he comes in and he's like, yeah, like, I know people in the capital probably annoy the shit out of you, Katniss. And he served see you next Tuesday. And he asked for District 12 specifically because he was like, yeah, they're the best district because, you know, they have the least or whatever. And although, like, District 11 is really poor and people, like, overlook that aspect too. Oh my god. And then Rue, her relationship with Rue, right? She dies and then Katniss becomes so radicalized because Rue teaches her about, like, community, teaches her about the other districts, and she's like, whoa, like, the capital has, like, suppressed this and made us not want to know about the other districts. I wonder why. And yeah, she sees all the struggles and she's like, oh shit, District 11 is kind of fucked and we have more in common than we think. And then Rue dies and she's like, oh my Jesus Christ, they are making us fight to the death. And then she ends up sympathizing with other people from other districts who she looked down upon, like the careers from districts one or whatever, one and two. And then she realizes how truly fucked up the Capitol is for making this all happen. And then she rebels by putting the flowers in Rue's little deathbed. Little deathbed? Why did I say it like that? Okay. And I'm just jumping around here because I did not organize my notes well. Yeah, and then she's like, because she was not really, like, radical before she'd entered the game. She was focused on survival over, like, change. And that's really what governments make the poor people in any society do. They're just like, okay, you'll be so focused on survival that you won't want to think about what you can do to change your circumstances, which is fight or something. I don't know. Which is like rebel, right? So it's like she doesn't realize that there's another option. And PETA at one point before they go into the games is like, ugh, I just wish there was a way to like show that the Capitol doesn't own us, to like show the world, to make a statement. And she's like, bitch, they just own us, like whatever, we're not gonna get out of this. And he's like, no, you don't understand. And then she does understand right after Rue dies, and she makes that statement with the flowers. And I think it is beautiful, and I think it is also symbolism. So that's my segue. It's hard because like there's not many examples of this, but like the flowers around Rue sort of symbolize something beautiful within tragedy, something, because she said, or something pure within something that immediately looks not aesthetically pleasing, I guess. Because like when she puts the flowers around Rue, she goes, I don't know what flowers these are. Maybe they're weeds, but they're still beautiful. And I think that kind of represents the struggles of District 11 and 12, because everyone sees them as these barbaric or like dirty or whatever districts that aren't like the coolest or whatever, because the Capitol is so focused on image and blah, 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 right? That they don't see the beautiful hearts of people. they don't see what's on the inside, right? Because they're so focused on how everything looks. And yeah, so the flowers were symbolism, and there's some examples later, but it's in the next book, unfortunately. And then there's the Mockingjay, which is the symbol of Katniss herself, and the rebellion. So they really come up around Rue, and it makes sense because Rue's the one who radicalizes her. I keep saying that. It sounds so dramatic, but, like, it is true. Rue's death does make her more aware like that. So there's a whole thing where they're talking about Mockingjays, right? Because Rue has this connection, and she explains how in the district, you do the call to the Mockingjays, and then they repeat it so everyone hears it, and that's used in her district when it's the end of the working day. So she'll go up and see when the sun is setting, do the call to the Mockingjays, they repeat it, all the workers hear it, so they don't have to work extra hours, unpaid hours, assuming, right? And they can just go home because they know that it's the signal, right? And first of all, it's protecting the workers. Second of all, Mockingjays come from the Capitol's mutations of animals. They had the Jabberjays, which were like, I don't know, I forget what they do exactly. Spread lies or whatever. I'll find out. And then, which breeded with mockingbirds. And then they took away the Jabberjays or something. But they don't really do that. Put them into hiding for now, temporary storage. And then the Mockingjays were created, but it was like an accident from the Capitol. And then they create such beautiful music, and it was like, oh, damn, it's an accident that the Capitol never intended to happen. So it represents, again, a deviation from the norm, all of that. And then at one point, Rue was like, yeah, the Mockingjays are harmless unless you go near the nest. And that's when they're really protective. So this represents Katniss, of course, because she's so protective about her home and the people that she loves. And then Rue teaches Katniss how to use the Mockingjays as, like, this tool. And then she dies and she becomes radicalized. And she realizes that she needs to use her own resilience, like that Mockingjay tool, to stick around after the Capitol use her own resilience and stick around like the Mockingjays, even when the Jabberjays were gone. So fire is also used as symbolism. She wears it, right? And then the Capitol uses it against her. And then I think it's about, like, reclaiming something that is used against you, right? Because then she becomes the girl on fire, and then Snow will use that to degrade her in the second book and be like, the girl on fire. But then it sort of becomes her title, and, like, she catches the spark that starts the rebellion or whatever, and then she becomes the girl on fire, and that's her title. Anyways, that is the symbolism, but there's more in the second book, and I can't wait to talk about that if I do another episode, to be honest. And then there's the ending, right? I just want to talk about the ending of the book, because that's where things get pretty fucked up, because they send those dog mutation things, and they have, like, the faces of the previous tributes. And then they get stuck on the cornucopia with Kato, and then Kato gets pushed off, and then they eat him for, like, hours and hours, because the Capitol wants Katniss to be the one to kill him. But in the movie, it's, like, instantaneous, which is kind of wild, because in the books, it's literally, like, it's kind of freaky. He doesn't die until, like, hours later when Katniss finally gets a good shot, because he's, like, inside of the cornucopia or whatever. It's kind of fucked up. Anyways, then the whole Barry thing. And she has so many mixed feelings when they're like, okay, it's fucked up because they're like, oh, the twist is like, oh, two people can win. And then, oh, never mind, two people can't win. We didn't plan that all along. Ha ha ha. And then it's like, okay, she has mixed feelings because she's like, let's eat these berries. But she's like, I can't kill PETA. And I don't want to die, obviously. And if I kill PETA, I won't be able to live with myself. And also, I don't feel like I could survive without him. So she has the Barry idea. And then she also realizes it's a way to fool the Capitol, which turns out to be dangerous. Like, she has no idea the impact that will have, how it'll look like rebelling. Because fooling the Capitol is not really possible in a vacuum. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really make a power like that look like fools without so many repercussions. And yeah, so much happens because, like, yeah, she doesn't want to live without PETA. That's another thing. And then it really shows after that scene, because she's like banging on the glass. Okay, to be honest, I explained. If you haven't read the book, you're probably very confused because I just ramble on based off my own notes and I didn't explain the plot really. Like, I sort of did, but like, whatever. And that's what I like doing, to be honest, just assuming people know it. It reminds me of the Hannibal Analysis Project, what I'm doing right now. And maybe I shouldn't have done that. Another thing that doesn't happen is in the movie, she literally goes deaf in one ear and PETA loses his leg. Did I say in the movie? In the book, she literally goes deaf in one ear and PETA loses his leg. And that is not shown in the movie at all. Like, he barely has an injury on his leg and she does not go deaf in the ear except for like a single second. And then the Capitol fixes it up, blah, 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 commentary on technology and all that. They don't want them to, they're fine with killing them, but as soon as there's a disability, oh, it's a big deal because now they need to be perfect for the Capitol. But like, yeah, it's kind of fucked up how that does not even happen in the movie whatsoever. And what else? The ending is kind of sad because PETA's like, oh, so you'd never cared about me the entire time? And she's like, no, I prioritize survival. And like, I don't want to get married because what if my kids are in the Hunger Games? Well, she doesn't even say that because the communication between them was awful. It was bad. At least it gets better in the second book. But like, goddamn. But she's like, no, that's not true. And Peter shuts down, right? Because he's like, oh, shit. I was bearing my emotions. I was being so honest about it. And she just does not care. But at the same time, he's not seeing the bigger picture because she really was truly afraid to lose him. And that's shown, like, literally within the games. And, you know, she didn't really communicate that, though, when he got upset. So then they just end the book, like, not understanding each other, and it drives me insane. The miscommunication just is too much. It is too much. So, yeah, that's about it. But they do communicate better in the second book. Thank goodness. I'm reading the second book now, and I'm really excited, and it makes me want to rebel once again because we live in a society. Yeah, I was going to say something else about that whole thing. I don't know. It's just the whole media being obsessed with appearances and the spectacle and not really caring about people's lives or how they're treated is a major theme of this one. And the second one is like talking about rebellion, like high key. And they cut a lot of that out of the movie, like from what I remember. I haven't watched the second movie yet because I'm not done the book. But yeah, they cut a lot out of that. And it's very interesting. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed and didn't feel completely lost during this episode. And yeah, if you enjoyed it, let me know. And I'll make a second one when I'm done the second book. Because I am obsessed with this now. And books are great. I don't know. There's just a period of time where I didn't read much. But now I'm trying to again. So yeah, Media Munchies is back. Thank you for listening. And hope to see you next time on another episode of Media Munchies Podcast. Bye.